If you could only tell somebody one thing that you learned from Jocko Podcast 17, what would that one thing be?
What did I learn, Jocko 17? I mean, I learned a lot. I learned where Band of Brothers came from.
Not a lot.
It's just one thing.
Well, it's always just one thing.
There's things that stick out, and there's things that I learned. And the way you phrase that question makes me want to rephrase it through conversation. So I'm more interested in when the guy in the company got shot in the butt and apologized. And it was kind of delivered as, this is the cost of doing business. Like, it was just normal to him. Like, yeah, like, guys. So that's why I've been thinking about it a lot, because also he didn't really talk about it too much. But this is a concoction of, like, courage, loyalty, and a few other things that can be packaged in the broader sense, X factor. But I don't know. I've been thinking a lot about that, and I don't know exactly, like, what I learned from that, except that it exists. So that's why I was, like, trying to, like, repackage how I was going to say that. But that was, like, the most interesting part of this podcast, and it was filled with interesting things. But this is the one thing that stuck out to me.
I actually like using the word interesting more than what did you learn.
Yeah, like that. Yes. Yeah,
so if we start with what is the most, what's the most interesting thing? So maybe it's because we're just fresh off of the podcast about the killing season, or the machete season, the killing in Rwanda. And last week we talked about how they just had, like, such a simple and straightforward objective that it's very, like, there was no confusion. It was very easy to execute. It's, you just start killing and you don't stop till they're all dead. I found that there was another example like that in this podcast, but happening in World War II.
Really?
And that's when they start out right at the beginning. It's about 10 minutes into the podcast. And they're fighting the Germans. And the Dick Winters, whoever's up the chain of command from him, I don't know the gentleman's name, but he's like, listen, there's fire among that hedgerow right there. Take care of it. And then, so those are the words from his commanding officer. And then Dick Winter's own interpretation, which he writes in his book, is that was the sum of my orders. No detailed battle plan, no intelligence summary, nothing but a specific task to be accomplished without delay. And then he wind up going and doing just that. And then Jocko's like annotated reading of that was like, we talk about the basic principles of combat all the time. And one of them is simple, clear, and concise. And that's exactly what his commanding officer's directions were. And it's also an example of something Jocko talks about all the time, which is decentralized command, which is, even if, you know, he always talks about that in the business element where, hey, we have this problem, we agree it's a problem, and I'm going to put you in charge. You go and solve that. And as long as you have competent people around you, then you're going to get much more done as an organization with decentralized command than without it. And in this case, you know, I think most people hearing the life story of Dick Winters would describe him as very competent.
I would agree. You know what I think about when you say that is how many ad hoc situations or problems that you have to solve in a war. Like, it's almost like if you micromanage everything, you're probably just going to, I don't know, implode would probably be the best word. You have to have a decentralized kind of mentality to get by that, and you have to rely on your people to go take care of these tasks that just seem to endlessly spring up everywhere. So it's a complicated thing, and no wonder like true leadership rises out of wars like this.
And I heard that, all I thought of was randomness.
Yeah.
And that's been a central philosophical tenet of mine, that, you know, we live in a world that is abundant with randomness, and it's very confusing for us. It's funny you brought that up, because I was listening to a podcast earlier. You know what Spartan races are? Have you ever heard of them before?
Yeah.
Okay, so I was listening to a podcast with the founder of that company. And the precursor to the Spartan race, which is basically like organized torture in the form of exercise, was this thing called the death race. And he was asked the question, like, well, why would you start something called the death race? And his answer was, he's like, I wanted to create something that emulated life. He talked about all the other races, you know, they're really hard because he was doing like endurance races like Ironmans and like 500 mile runs and all this kind of crazy stuff. He's like, all other races are hard, but they're like catered training days. Every mile, somebody is giving you water. I thought life isn't like that. There's not always a safety net to catch you. And then he compares it to running a business. He's like, you run a business and it's hard. All these things coming at you at once, competition, lawsuits, insurance, payroll, marketing. And so he said, how could I design a race that reflects the complexity and unpredictability of life? And so that kind of just made me think of what you're talking about, where you're thrown into war. If you don't have these simple, clear, concise people, if you're not well-trained, you know, you can't sit there and you're not going to micromanage them. I think Jocko said in his own experience, something like, you know, maybe you can micromanage maybe a group of four or five guys, but anything above that number, you have to have decentralized command. So I guess when you say that, I just think of, like, you know, that's present in everything, whether it's business, war, the death race. Yeah, it's just, how do you, that's something I always think about, because I think about that having a kid. Like, we're educating our children, and sometimes in an environment that no longer exists. And so people always ask, they're like, well, what would you do? And it's like, you have to teach them how to problem solve.
That's my number one tenet.
You can't predict what you're going to run into. But as long as you understand that you are going to run into problems, and two, that you can solve them, whether it's through training, creativity, whatever you want to put on that. But the idea that just rote memorization is going to make them excel in life or in any other situation, those are the thoughts that come to mind when I hear you say.
I agree with you 100%. And that's like, I mean, fortunately, we don't deal with the consequences of war. Like, it's not really life and death matter. It matter if something springs up. But to add on to what you were saying about teaching the next generation, and I've been talking to my wife about this, is like, that is the number one thing I want to really impound, is like the problem solving, the adaptability. It's a skill that's never going to go out of style. And you're just 100% right. 'Cause like, we used to take tests and it was just built on how you can remember the material, but nothing was ever digested or properly regurgitated into the knowledge. Yeah. Like, so I think it's one of the most important things you can do is to teach problem solving. Like, that's the best gift. So
you just said something, that we don't have to deal with like the reality of
consequences.
War. We're learning about military history, but we haven't taken part of it. And so I text you something earlier where I was like, this is an interesting podcast because we hear, you know, cursing from Jocko right away. And he's doing it because he's reading a letter that, so that makes sense. And it's in there and he's quoting it. I think about that too, where like, I obviously curse in my day-to-day life, but when I'm doing podcasts like Founders Podcast, I try to limit that because of what I learned from Jocko. Jocko obviously uses curse words all the time in his life, but he's like, hey, you know, a lot of people listen to the podcast. If I can use another word, then I will. And he talks about, you know, he doesn't like when he listens to some people talk and they use too much. Like, you see traits in other people, like people using too much cursing. He's talked about on the podcast before. He finds that unappealing. In my own experience, like, I read text just like Jocko does for his podcast. And when I do, if there's curse words in there, I'm certainly not going to censor them. I'm going to say it. But what it made me – something I wrote down right after I text that to you was and how this thought just came to mind was, why is Jocko the way he is? And why is his message resonating with so many, maybe millions of people at this point? Definitely hundreds of thousands. And the fact is, people are really attracted to him not wasting any time. And the thought I had was, I'm going to read this quote that he says about 5 minutes and 44 seconds into the podcast. He's reading this letter. And he's like, listen, he's talking about the death of friends in combat and war, right? Which is what you just said we don't ever have to deal with.
Hopefully.
And he says, it gives us a reason to look at our lives and say, look, you son of a bitch, this is why you have to live life to the fullest. This is why you must fight every day to be a better man. And when I heard that, I'm like, wow. Like, I've been following Jocko for a few years. I've read his books. Like, his message clearly like speaks to me, right? It's something I admire. He has traits in himself that I would like to adapt in my own, you know, which I think a lot of his audience do. And that really hit me for the first time in 2 years. I'm like, holy shit. Like, the reason this guy takes life where he's telling you don't waste it, it's short, is because like he has an obligation to his friends that died in combat under, I think under his leadership. You know, it's obviously not his fault. People are gonna die in war. Like when you go through that kind of visceral experience, like we've known each other for 20 years. Imagine being in combat one another and one of us dies. Like you would want to honor that and realize, hey, I have something that's precious that people, like every single person that's dead, wishes they had, and that's time. And I'm not going to waste mm-hmm. it. So I don't know. I want to save that. I took a screenshot of my phone, and I like the fact that he calls, you know, the reader, the person, I don't know who wrote the letter, but the person's like, listen, son of a bitch. He's kind of like using, the reason I bring this up and tying this to use of profanity is because one of the benefits of using profanity and not using it too often is when you do use it, it kind of like jolts and really sinks into the listener's brain. You know, it makes it more impactful than if you just used it every other word. And yeah, I want to fight every day to be a better person.
This is one thing I really appreciate. Like you start to appreciate things like going through this military course or this / Jocko kind of like even just regular servicemen, like what they had to do. Like there's definitely a different appreciation that I have already. And we're not even like a quarter of the way through, you know, like some.
I think we're like not even 10. I think we're 10% through. Yeah. I think it's at 150 something when we're recording.
The stories that don't surface, you know, I think about that. I'm like, man, this guy actually lived and told the tale. What about the guy who like went through 9 horrific ordeals but died on the 10th? Like, god damn, like so close. Like those are probably like the saddest stories. Like, but anyway, man, like appreciation is something that I am steadily building with this course.
Yeah, it does make, in comparison, your life seem all that not that difficult. And at the same time, when you're focusing on the extremes, you can learn a lot about humans from the extreme, where he's talking about, you know, Dick's talking about what got the same thing that gets him through the war will get you through your life. So he's like, listen, I live this war one day at a time, which I know that we're the humans love to think about the future and the past, but that is, I mean, we only experience life one day at a time, so I think that's good. And he said, I promised myself if I survived, I'd find a small farm and spend the remainder of my life in quiet and peace. I looked up and read his Wikipedia page right before we recorded, and he indeed does that.
Good.
Something else that I found out it just kind of speaks to the, again, like this guy is like another Jocko. They're flying into being parachuted into D-Day when a German anti-aircraft missile hits the plane he's on, kills almost everyone on board. Winters jumps, lands safely, but loses his weapon during the drop. He nevertheless oriented himself, assembled several other paratroopers that survived, and proceeded toward the unit's assigned objective near St. Marie du Mont. Later that day, Winters led an attack that destroyed a battery of German 105 howitzers, which were firing onto the causeways that served as principal exits from this place called Utah
Flanking
Beach.
Them, baby. Like that.
So that, think so about awesome. That. Like he almost dies, survives. He's like, okay, well, I don't have what I need, but we have an objective. So let's, like, that's just the whole thing. Like, life's not going to go according to plan.
And this is
plan.
What I mean. Yeah.
He had a setback.
This is what I mean about appreciation. This guy jumped out of an exploding plane, presumably. And then shook it off and then rallied. Like, you don't even see, like, that type of thing. And, like, I don't even know what the, like, that doesn't exist in sports. That doesn't really exist in, I guess it does in business.
I left one part out.
Well, really?
So he's fighting. Yeah, they overtake the howitzers, right? There was about 50 German troops. Winters only had 13 men.
That's all you need if you've got a good leader.
Yeah, so. To this day, it's called the Burcourt Manor Assault. I don't know how to. That's a French word. I'm mispronouncing it. But it's taught at military. It's taught at West Point as a textbook example of an assault on a fixed position by a numerically inferior force.
I love
force.
It. That's another course that we should take.
Another interesting fact is they call him back into war in Korea. He doesn't want to go. He's like, I've seen enough war.
Yeah, let me chill in Pennsylvania, man.
They put him to training, and he decided he was this is hilarious because this sounds like Jocko too. He became disillusioned with his job, finding that he had little enthusiasm for training officers who lacked discipline and did not attend their scheduled classes.
That must have.
As a result, he volunteered to attend Ranger School, where he passed and became a Ranger.
No big deal.
He's like, I'm sick of dealing with you guys. But then he winds up getting out of Korea anyways. They gave him the option to resign, and he did, because he's like, he won enough medals in World War II. I don't want to go back.
They could probably teach a course on just his battlefield ethics alone, too. Like that one story where he gets a shitty order, and we've seen this even throughout other episodes, and he's just like, well, wait a minute. It just snowed. It's loud. It's crunchy. We're open in the middle, and there was a couple other things. He's like, yes, sir, and then promptly ignored it. I love that stuff. And he's just thinking, but what if I was? That was the best question of it all. He's like, what if I was a career officer who literally takes every order as I guess testament, if you will, and they will follow every order. Like, he would have had probably a rougher life, you know, thinking about, like,
he might have died. Might not have had a life.
But yeah, well,
they're sending him into a compromised position. And luckily, he wasn't like just like a, Jocko talks about all the time. Like, people think people in the military aren't incapable of independent thought, and that's just couldn't be further from the truth.
Yeah, I mean, I think if like the worst case scenario would be honestly surviving, but losing a majority of the people that you brought out there with you. So
yeah, especially if you consider your
so
fault.
Sometimes saying no and like and critical thinking, like we like you know we will forever just highlight when we see it how valuable that is, like especially in wartime, like you just you just got to be thinking, man. You always got to be thinking.
So I want to switch the topic a little bit here, because I find it interesting, because I had a question when I heard this part, and it has to do with the fact that I know you're into snowboard season. Now
we're going to talk about snow.
So he talked about we're going to talk about physical fitness,
okay?
Because it played a main part in Dick Winter's life, where he talks about let me find the exact quote. He credits his fitness and his ability to not break and to cope with the daily stress of combat. So because he was in such good shape, he said, exercise and physical activity kept me mentally alert, built my endurance, and kept me supple. And then Jocko's annotation here was, you've got to do it. You have to have the discipline and work out every day. And they make the good point. I think it was Echo. And he's like, it's one of the few things you can do that affects everything in your life. So I want to see, is there any difference? Like, I know when it's off season, when you're not, because for people that are not familiar, like, can you describe how physically strenuous snowboarding can be?
It can be very strenuous. It's not muscles you.
What happens to your body, for example, the transformation your body goes into? Because when I saw you, and I went to like jab at your midsection, you had spent like 50 days on the mountain snowboarding. And it was like rock hard, which is not the normal like Rob state of affairs.
Yeah, usually I carry a little chubby winter weight, just a little. But it's very, very strenuous. And last year was the year I actually applied like a lot of like, what can I do better? Because I've been doing it for so long. I'm out here. I'm doing big mountain things. And endurance is important. Like, your best line of defense is your endurance.
So what is your endurance like during the season compared to when it's not in the season?
It's hard to say because I can't snowboard in the summer. So I don't really, you know what I mean?
But do you feel it when you're doing other activities? Because I know you like hike up mountains and stuff, and when it's off season, trying to keep your body.
Yeah, absolutely. Like when I start hiking in like the spring, it doesn't necessarily mean like I'm going to be like ready for hiking. It's completely different muscles. And I know that's like the hardest thing to kind of comprehend, but like walking uphill is way different than riding downhill or doing mogul runs or just like in the glades going around trees.
What effect does it have on like your mental well-being, like when you're engaged in constant strenuous physical activity and when you're not?
It does me well, man. Like, I see that I'm able to read a few more pages without getting tired of a book, of course. I'm more relaxed. I get better sleep. So it kind of it kind of helps in indirect ways, right? Not only are you doing the physical activity, you're getting your heart beat up, you're out in cold, you're in cold weather, so your lungs fill up with, I don't know if you know this, but cold weather is, what I hear, like, it's, there's less oxygen, but because it's cold, it's thicker, so it fills your lungs up more, and the capacity, your lung capacity goes up too, which.
And you're burning more calories, yeah, right?
Like
you're,
kind of.
You're expending more energy. We, is what I've
yeah
understood.
Oh yeah, 100%. And if you get wet, you burn 2x. Like it's something insane. Like your body will burn the calories like pretty fast. Like you could almost see it, like the next day. You know what I mean? Like you're like, wow, I was out. I did like 20,000 vertical feet like a couple weeks ago, and the next day, like I looked at myself. I was just like, damn, you are, you know, looking yoked, young man, you know, like it was, yeah, like it feels good. Like you put in the work, but the more you put in the work, the more you can do better. So I imagine you want to think, like, let's say you fall in a place where it's not like you were not seen. There's nobody else there to help you. You're in deep snow. Being fit really helps, because you think you fall in like some snow, like you're just going to like fluffy snow. Oh, it's not really going to hurt, but try digging mm-hmm. yourself out of like 3 feet of snow, just 3 feet of snow. That's not a lot in this area. Just 3 feet of fresh snow. You will expend so much energy with your feet already. Like now you're buried here. Your feet are buried and they're also yeah. in a fixed position on a plank. And that doesn't make things easier when you have to dig like, and this happened to me a couple weeks ago. We got a big storm. I went out the day before I went to New York. I fell and my feet were above me. And it was like one of the hardest mm-hmm. things to get back onto my feet. But, and then that's like humbling. You're like, I gotta work on that. You know,
so the reason I bring that up is because multiple times in the book, he credits physical fitness with like his success. So when I think of like how you're describing it, how it's affected my own life, how it's affected Dick Winters, like, again, what can you learn from the extremes? He's telling you the importance of physical fitness and keeping him alive and mentally healthy to get through the most traumatic experience that a person can go through, which is combat. So why do you think it's not applicable to your life? Not you, Rob.
Yeah, I'm talking about
metaphor. You know? And so I was like, wow, it is like you. He's right. You have to physically move every yeah. day. And he talks about, he's like, listen, I'm not sure there is such a thing as a natural born leader. Any success I had was the product of a good upbringing, intense study and preparation, and physical conditioning that set me apart from my peers. So I think two of the main messages to Jocko podcast is intense study and preparation, mm-hmm. right? I mean, this guy has to read a book every week and talk about it, and he has to remember it. Like, he can't just skim through it. And the fact that he talks to you about, you know, like working out every day, moving your body every day. And then if you can, in addition to weights, doing some other activity. You do snowboarding, he does surfing, all kinds of other stuff. So yeah, I just came away from this podcast with, you know, talking about lessons learned here, summing up here is just like, these things are all related and you cannot, like there's no silo. Yeah. You can't just be really smart, but be physically unhealthy. You can't put poison into your body and think that you're going to feel
yeah.
okay.
No, I agree.
You need them all at the same. And what's the other thing they talked about on the podcast? A lot of people think, you know, people that exercise a lot are just dumb jocks. Well, yeah, there's some people that are like that. You can't be that either. You have to read, you have to study, you have to prepare. So check this out. Let me just, one other thing, Rob, and I'll turn it over to you, is towards the end of the book review part, he talks about, this is Dick Winters talking about like the if you're in a leadership ability, leadership position, he said what you need to do. He's like, those entrusted to lead must study their profession to be totally proficient in tactics and technology. Prior to the invasion, meaning D-Day, I read every tactical manual I could lay my hands on to improve my tactical knowledge and professional competence while other soldiers were out carousing in the pubs. And to me, that lesson is like, you have one life, don't waste it, reach your full potential.
You know, I'll stress it to anybody listening. Like, if you can get out and do some exercise, like try to make it a part of
your daily life. Like it really helps. Like it helps me with reading because I'm more relaxed and I'm more able to focus because I don't have like, you know, I guess it's like the ADD, like you just can't like focus, but I work out and I get my focus. I get like, and we're talking about long-term focus, like 30 to 50 pages of reading a sitting, rather than like 15 to 25 because I'm not like working out. Like I've seen the difference.
Or even worse, just scrolling through a social feed mindlessly, you know. But anyways, if you guys are interested in reading or listening to Dick Winter's book, Beyond the Band of Brothers, we'll leave a link in the show notes that you can get 2 free audiobooks. Pick that one up. And if you're listening to this and somehow have not listened to or read Extreme Ownership, which is still on the New York Times bestseller list years after it released because it's a fantastic book that Jocko and Leif Babin wrote, definitely you can listen to it for free if you use that link. And if you're interested in entrepreneurship and biographies and history, I have a podcast that I pattern lightly off of Jocko, where I try to study the history of entrepreneurship by reading biographies. So it's very much something that he inspired me to do. It's called Founders. I'll leave a link below. If not, you can just search Founders Podcast in whatever podcast player you are listening to this in. And next week, we're talking about the Russian and the Chechen War again. And I'll actually, like I said last week, Rob, I'll have more to contribute because I listened to the audiobook about a week ago now. And it is called One Soldier's War by Arkady Babchenko.
And that's pretty good. The Russian's not bad.
Yeah, right. Well, it's pretty, it's a very extreme book. So he's a wonderful writer. So we'll talk about that next week. And I guess that's it. I'll talk to you next week, Ben. All right.